Okay, so this is my last lecture on bifurcation theory, and we're going to consider the most complicated of the codimension 2 bifurcations, the fold-hop bifurcation. So let's start by reviewing a little bit first. The codimension 2 bifurcations that we've studied so far, the simplest one is the cusp, where two loci of saddle nodes come together in this cusp-shaped singularity. And inside the cusp region, you have multiple steady states, and outside the cusp, you have a single steady state. Okay, the next one is the degenerate hop bifurcation, a codimension 2 bifurcation. This is where a supercritical hop bifurcation turns into a subcritical hop bifurcation. So you go from bifurcating stable limit cycles to bifurcating unstable limit cycles. And always associated with that is a locus of cyclic fold bifurcations. And they come together in this very characteristic pattern called a degenerate hop bifurcation. Okay, the third example is the Takens-Bogdanoff bifurcation and backwards. And at the Takens-Bogdanoff bifurcation, a subcritical hop bifurcation is coming together with a locus of saddle node bifurcations. And there's also a locus of saddle loop bifurcations. So they all have to fit together in this fashion at a Takens-Bogdanoff bifurcation. And the fourth codimension 2 bifurcation that we discussed was the saddle node loop. And the saddle node loop is similar. The saddle node loop is where a locus of saddle nodes and a locus of saddle loops comes together at a tangency and creates this saddle node on an invariant circle bifurcation, the SNC bifurcation or the sniper bifurcation. And there was one other codimension 2 bifurcation that I talked about, which was the degenerate saddle loop bifurcation. That's where the saddle loops change from being stable limit cycles to unstable limit cycles. So it's very similar to the degenerate hop bifurcation. I didn't put it on this review slide. Okay, so these we've discussed already. These codimension 2 bifurcations. You have to have two parameters that you can vary, and you have to choose them just right to find this codimension 2 bifurcation point. And the codimension 2 bifurcation point organizes. It's the organizing center for the codimension 1 bifurcations. Okay, next slide. Let me look a little bit more closely at a Takens-Bogdanoff bifurcation. And now I'm trying to, in addition to the two parameters that we vary, P1 and P2, I've added a dynamical variable, X1, to show the fold line, because this at a Takens-Bogdanoff bifurcation, there's a fold. So the locus of steady states is a folded surface. There are, say, stable steady states on the upper part of the fold and saddle points on the lower part of the fold. Okay, so this greenish line is the fold line. That's where one eigenvalue of the Jacobian matrix is identically equal to zero. That's where you get a saddle node bifurcation. Okay, and then on the upper surface of the folded surface of steady states is a locus of hop bifurcations. And at a hop bifurcation, the real part of two eigenvalues is equal to zero. And at the Takens-Bogdanoff bifurcation, where everything comes together with the saddle loop is on the lower surface, where they come together, you have a double zero condition on the eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix. So Takens-Bogdanoff is sometimes called a double zero bifurcation, because you have two eigenvalues that are equal to zero. Now, there's two different ways that you can get two eigenvalues equal to zero. You can start off with one eigenvalue equal to zero and say the other eigenvalue negative. That's typically the case at a saddle node bifurcation, right? One eigenvalue is equal to zero, the other eigenvalue is negative. That's a saddle node bifurcation. But it's also possible that lambda 2 is greater than 0. That's also a saddle node bifurcation. Either one of these are saddle node bifurcations. It's just the difference is that in the case when lambda 2 is less than 0, when you go past the bifurcation point, you get a stable node and a saddle point. When lambda 2 is greater than 0, as you go past the bifurcation point, you get an unstable node and a saddle point. Okay? And, of course, the codimension 2 situation is exactly when lambda 2 equals 0. So you can get a double 0 when the saddle node is changing from bifurcating to stable nodes to bifurcating to unstable nodes. You get the double 0. But the other way to get a double 0 is to start with the real part of lambda 1 and lambda 2 equals 0, and the imaginary part not equal to 0. So now you're on a Hopf bifurcation, because the real parts are equal to 0, but the imaginary part is not 0, so you're bifurcating limit cycles, and the frequency of the limit cycle is the imaginary part of the eigenvalue. The period of the limit cycle is 2 pi divided by the imaginary part. So the other way you can get a double 0 is to have the imaginary part of a pair of complex conjugate eigenvalues go to 0. The real parts are already 0, and then the imaginary part gets smaller and smaller and smaller until it goes to 0. Then you have a double 0 again by a different route. In this case, you have limit cycles that are getting slower and slower and slower because the frequency is going to 0 and the period is going to infinity. Okay? So that's the situation at the Takens-Bogdanov bifurcation. The double 0, and you get the two zeros by two different routes. That's why the bifurcations interact with each other in this way. Okay? Now, if you project this surface down onto the parameter plane, push the button, then you get the typical two-parameter bifurcation diagram for Takens-Bogdanov bifurcation. Okay? That's projecting these curves down onto the parameter plane. Gives you the two-parameter bifurcation diagram. Okay, you with me on this? Clear? Then let's go to the new bifurcation, which is the fold-hop bifurcation. A fold-hop bifurcation. In this case, there are two conditions that we're going to satisfy, in addition to the steady state condition. Okay, so the steady state condition is just that the kinetics of the reaction is equal to zero. The steady state condition defines the folded surface. Okay, and the fold line is where one eigenvalue is equal to zero, identically equal to zero. So that's the locus of saddle node bifurcations. Now, we consider the case where we have Hopf bifurcations on the upper surface. That's pretty typical. But it's possible that the Hopf, as you follow the Hopf bifurcations on the upper surface of the fold, they come across the fold and they just continue on the lower surface of the fold. So initially they were bifurcating from, say, a focus. It's a Hopf bifurcation, so it's bifurcating from a focus, and it just changed to bifurcating from a saddle point, because a limit cycle can bifurcate from a saddle point as well. Okay? So the line of Hopf bifurcations is just continuously moving across the fold line and then onto the lower surface of the steady state surface. Okay? And that the codimension 2 bifurcation point is right here, where you're satisfying two conditions simultaneously, that one eigenvalue be a single real eigenvalue equal to 0, saying it's a saddle node, and the second condition is that there are two other eigenvalues that are complex conjugate pair and have a real part identically equal to 0. Okay? So that's the condition at the fold-hop bifurcation. You're getting both bifurcations at the same time. Okay? Now, project this down onto the parameter plane, and this is what a fold-hop bifurcation is going to look like. You see you follow a locus of saddle node bifurcations in the parameter space, and then you start following the Hopf bifurcations, and you find that the Hopf bifurcations approach the saddle node, but then it looks as if the Hopf bifurcations just graze the saddle node and continue. But of course, what happens is this locus of Hopf bifurcations is on the upper surface of the fold, and then this part of the locus of Hopf bifurcations is on the lower surface of the fold. It looks, for all the world, like a Takens-Bogdanov bifurcation, but it isn't. It's something completely different. And at a Takens-Bogdanov, you don't have the continuation of the hop. Instead, you have the saddle loop coming off. In the fold-hop bifurcation, there's no saddle loop. The hop bifurcations just continue onto the lower surface. So our question is, what happens in these three domains, if you do a circuit around the fold-hop bifurcation, what kind of vector fields do you expect to see? Because this is a codimension 2 bifurcation, it organizes, it's the organizing center for characteristic changes in the nature of the vector field. And that's what we have to figure out. You with me? Okay. Next slide. So, at a fold-Hopf bifurcation, you have three eigenvalues that you have to keep track of. So you have to have at least a three-variable dynamical system. There have to be at least three dynamical variables so that you can have three eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix. So we can no longer illustrate this on a phase plane with a two-dimensional dynamical system like all the other bifurcations. Okay? We need a minimum of three variables. And it turns out in this situation that it's very convenient to introduce a cylindrical coordinate system. Okay? So we start off with three variables, x1, x2, x3, in a Cartesian coordinate system. Those would be the concentrations of your chemicals. But in order to see the nature of the bifurcations, it's best to transform that into a cylindrical coordinate system. So we still have the x1 axis, but now x2 and x3 have been replaced by a polar coordinate system, rho and phi. Okay? So x2 plus ix3 is rho e to the I phi. That's a polar coordinate system in two dimensions and just a regular rectangular coordinate system in one of the dimensions. Okay, let's see what that looks like. Okay. So we can plot it. We can now plot the vector field or the state space on the plane with the x1 direction I'll put in the horizontal direction, and rho, the polar coordinate, I'll put in the y direction. And then you have to imagine that there's a third direction, which is the angular direction, phi. And this whole system we can describe by d phi dt is equal to a constant. So everything is just rotating around the x1 axis. And we just take that rotation out. By taking that rotation out, we can freeze it and draw the pictures in two dimensions. But if you want to imagine the vector field, you have to always remember that everything that's off the x1 axis is in constant motion around the x1 axis. Okay? So that's the way I'm going to draw the vector fields. So let's try it. Next slide. Here's a typical vector field drawn in this coordinate system, x1 and rho. So here's the x1 axis, and along the x1 axis we have three steady states. A stable steady state here, a stable steady state here, and an unstable steady state here. Okay? And those are true steady states because the rotation is around the x-axis. So as things rotate, these points don't move. Those are three real steady states. Okay? But this point off the axis, it looks like a steady state in this projection, but of course, in the dynamical system, we're rotating around the x-axis, so actually this is one point on a circular limit cycle that goes round and round the x-axis. And if we examine this limit cycle, we see that the limit cycle is attracting in one direction and repelling in the other direction. So it's an unstable limit cycle. Okay? This steady state is attracting in all directions. It's attracting in the x direction, it's attracting in the rho direction, and of course that pulls things in. As they spiral, as they rotate around, they spiral in. Okay? So that these two guys are completely stable. But you can't call them a node or a focus, right? Because it comes in directly on along the x-axis, but it spirals in along the other two directions. You have to get the hang of this picture. Yeah, Arun?
So, if you consider the point above the x-axis.
Yeah, this one.
Would you say that there is another, basically another path which comes from behind the board onto this point?
Yeah, I'm going to try and draw it, actually, in just a second. Let's look at the next slide, okay? Yeah, so here's what I'm trying to say. If I draw it in the original x1, x2, x3 coordinate system, here are the three steady states along the x1 axis, and here's the unstable limit cycle rotating around the x1 axis. Okay? But it's a complicated topology around this limit cycle because of these manifolds. So in the next slide, I have a picture that tries to draw what this limit cycle looks like in three dimensions. You can go to the next slide. Okay, so this is taken from Kuznetsov's book. Okay, and here's the diagram: the x1 axis, the rho axis. There's the unstable limit cycle that's rotating around. He always puts the x-axis vertical. I always put it horizontal, just to confuse you. Here's the limit cycle. Here's the x1 axis down the center. Here's the limit cycle rotating around the x1 axis. And the limit cycle is attracting along one manifold and repelling along the other manifold. So in this picture, look at the attracting, the stable manifold. Suppose I start off with initial conditions along this line in the stable manifold. And if I move forward in time, they will come down onto the limit cycle. Okay? So the stable manifold is shrinking down onto the limit cycle in time as you move around. But if I start with initial conditions along this unstable manifold and then go forward in time, those points move further and further away from the limit cycle. That's the unstable manifold. So it's a very complicated topology of the vector field. It's rather hard to visualize, but we can capture that information in this abbreviated form by this projection. And it's all due to the fact that we're assuming this polar symmetry, so that we have this continual rotary motion around the x-axis. Yeah.
What do the arrows on the code actually mean?
These arrows?
No,
or these arrows? Okay. These arrows mean that we're attracting in this direction. And there's a manifold, and as you move forward in time, you stay on this manifold, and every point on this manifold moves closer and closer to the limit cycle as you go forward in time.
But typically those arrows would mean that
you don't come in directly along the line, right? That doesn't mean you come in directly from this point onto the limit cycle.
It's
no, it's not, right? It's just supposed to capture the idea that this is a stable manifold. Actually, if you start at a point, you don't come directly onto the limit cycle. Of course, you move in the manifold, but you get sucked onto the limit cycle. Whereas if you start along the unstable manifold, here's the unstable manifold, and at any point as you move forward in time, you get further and further away from the limit cycle. Okay? So it's an unstable limit cycle. And that's its characteristics. These are, what did I call these earlier? The flow K multipliers for the limit cycle. We talked about that some months ago, actually. The way you characterize the stability of a limit cycle is exactly this way. This is a Poincaré section. You see where the limit cycle punctures this plane. And then you wait for it to go once around, and you see where it comes back and punctures the plane. Okay? So if you start at a point on the stable manifold and then go around once and come back, you'll be on the stable manifold, but you'll be closer to the limit cycle. And if you start at a point on the unstable manifold and go around once, you'll be further away. Okay? And then there's always one of your multipliers is equal to one. That's because if you start right on the limit cycle and go around once, you come back to it. The Lyapunov exponents are related to those flow K multipliers. So they describe the stability of the limit cycle. Okay, that's the setup. Okay, next slide. Now, we have to figure out what the vector fields look like around a fold-hop bifurcation. And there are actually four different varieties of fold-hop bifurcation. This is the simplest one, case number one. So in case number, and so here's, I always draw, this is my locus of saddle node bifurcations, here's my locus of hop bifurcations, the codimension 2 bifurcation point is here. Okay. And I always start in this domain where there are no steady states. I'm just drawing a picture of the vector field locally. There are no steady states. Everything is moving from left to right. But we're close to a saddle node bifurcation. We can tell that because things are starting to slow down here. Okay? And now I'm going to cross this saddle node bifurcation and go into this area. When I cross the saddle node bifurcation, then I create a saddle point and a node on the x-axis. So now I have two steady states, right? This is a stable node. It's stable in all directions. And this is a saddle point. It's unstable in the x1 direction, but it's stable in the rho phi direction. It spirals in the rho phi direction. Okay? Now, I'm going to continue my circuit. I'm going to cross this locus of hop bifurcations. And the hop bifurcation happens at the saddle point. Okay? The saddle point was spiraling in, and now it's spiraling out from the saddle point. So the saddle point has changed its stability, and there's now a small amplitude, unstable limit cycle that bifurcated away from the saddle point. Okay? We know it's a limit cycle because it's off the x-axis, and we can see that it's unstable. It's got a stable manifold and an unstable manifold. Okay? Now, as I move into this domain, that limit cycle grows in amplitude. Okay? And then as I keep moving, I come close to this hop bifurcation where the limit cycle is now collapsing onto the stable focus. Right? This is a focus. It's stable in one direction and spiraling in the other direction. And now the unstable limit cycle is collapsing onto that stable steady state, and it's going to change the stability of that stable steady state as we cross the hop bifurcation. So now this steady state is unstable. It's stable in one direction and then spirals away in the other direction because of the hop bifurcation. Change the stability of the steady state. And then, when I cross this saddle node, the two steady states come together and annihilate each other, and I get back to this picture. Okay? So that's the tableau of the vector field in the neighborhood of the fold-hop bifurcation. And the question is, what will a one-parameter bifurcation diagram look like if I cross through those regions? Okay? So this dashed line is, say, a one-parameter locus. I'm varying one parameter that carries me around the fold-hop bifurcation and visits all these regions. What would I see on the one-parameter bifurcation diagram? Okay, so here's the parameter that parameterizes this curve, and here's the variable. And what do we see? When we start in this domain, and there are no stable steady states locally. Okay, of course there's some stable attractor someplace else. We're just not concerned about that. As the parameter increases, I cross a saddle node bifurcation and I create a stable steady state and an unstable saddle point. That's a typical saddle node bifurcation. The next bifurcation I see is a hop bifurcation on the lower sheet, because the hop bifurcation is happening from the saddle point. It's changing the stability of the saddle point, and it's bifurcating off small amplitude, unstable limit cycles, which grow in amplitude and then shrink in amplitude and disappear at the second hop bifurcation, where they change the stability of the steady state on the upper sheet. And now I have two unstable steady states. And as I go further, they come together and annihilate each other at the saddle node bifurcation. Okay? So that's what it'll look like if you ever see it. Presumably there's some other branch of stable steady states, right? And this would just, as you were changing the parameter values, this would just, the only thing you would see is this little branch of stable steady states. Everything else is unstable. And they would appear at a saddle node bifurcation and then just disappear at this hop bifurcation. They lose their stability. Okay, you with me? Next. I just want to point out what's happening to the eigenvalues. So now I'm plotting the three eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix. And at the saddle node bifurcation, I create a completely stable steady state. So it has one real negative eigenvalue and a pair of complex conjugate eigenvalues with negative real parts. And a typical saddle point with one positive eigenvalue and a pair of complex conjugate eigenvalues with negative real parts. So it's attracting in one direction and it spirals in the other two directions. Yeah, Janani? Why is it called a saddle node bifurcation? It's, yeah, I see what you mean. Because usually we think of a node as only real, okay? And in higher dimensions, you have to generalize it. Maybe I should just call it an attractor and repeller, okay? So only if all the roots of negative real parts is an attractor and everybody else is a repeller. But I want to distinguish between what's happening to these eigenvalues, okay? Now, when I come to the first hop bifurcation, this saddle point changes its stability because the real part changes from negative to positive. So then I get this is a strong repeller. It's repelling in all three directions. Okay? And when I hit this hop bifurcation, it's the attractor loses its stability by the real parts going from negative to positive. Okay? So now this becomes a saddle point. And this is a completely unstable repeller. And those two can then combine with each other at a saddle node bifurcation where the real eigenvalue changes its sign. Okay? So everything makes sense. Everything fits together. This is the way it has to look, but it's not the only possibility at a fold-hop bifurcation. You with me so far? Okay, let's look at case two. In case two, we start in the this domain, but now in our base state we have an unstable limit cycle. We start off with an unstable limit cycle. It's rotating around the x-axis, but all the flow is kind of from left to right here. But when you're above, outside that limit cycle, the flow is going in the other direction. Okay, now we cross the saddle node bifurcation, and we create an attractor and a saddle point. But we still have the unstable limit cycle, right? We just created two new steady states when we cross the saddle node bifurcation. Okay? Now, when we continue our circuit, the unstable limit cycle is going to come down and annihilate with the attractor at the hop bifurcation. And it'll change the stability of this attractor. Okay? So it becomes now a saddle point. It's coming in one direction and it's spiraling out in the other directions. Okay? Now when we continue our circuit and cross this hop bifurcation, this hop bifurcation is from the rightmost steady state, and it was spiraling in, and now it's spiraling out, and we have a new unstable limit cycle on the other side. And then when we cross the saddle node bifurcation, we get rid of the two steady states, and we're back to the situation with an unstable limit cycle. Okay? So that's also perfectly likely what you can see in the neighborhood of this fold hop bifurcation. Now, what will the one-parameter bifurcation diagram look like? In this case, when the bifurcation parameter is small, there's an unstable limit cycle. And now as you increase the bifurcation parameter, you go through the saddle node bifurcation, create a stable steady state, but then you annihilate that stable steady state at the hop bifurcation, and you get this unstable state. Meanwhile, later, you go through a hop bifurcation on the lower surface to create a new unstable limit cycle, and that's the unstable limit cycle that lives on the far side of this bifurcation. Now, presumably, there's an attractor somewhere, right? Presumably, there's a cyclic fold somewhere that creates that changes these unstable limit cycles into stable limit cycles. So I would imagine this is just locally what's happening in the neighborhood of the codimension 2 bifurcation. But globally, I suspect these things would tie together and there would be a big stable limit cycle that surrounds everything. But I don't know, because I don't have a good biochemical example of this bifurcation, unfortunately. Okay? You with me? Then let's try case number three. So here's another possibility. Like case number one, our ground state has no attractors or repeller. I mean, it's just the vector field is just flowing through. Okay. And now we cross the saddle node bifurcation and create a pair of steady states. Okay, then we cross the hop bifurcation and we get an unstable limit cycle bifurcating from this steady state. And I should have changed its color to white, right, because now it's unstable. And it's spiraling away from this steady state and coming down onto this unstable limit cycle. No, this is a stable limit cycle, right? That's a limit cycle because it's circulating around. That's a stable limit cycle because it's attracting in the Poincaré section. Okay? And now the vector field swings around there and comes into the saddle point over on this side. Okay? Let's see what happens in the next region. In the next region, there's an orbit that is bifurcated away from the limit cycle. So this is a stable limit cycle, right? Because that goes round and round, and it's stable because things are spiraling in towards this point. But what's this circle in the Poincaré section if I rotate it around the x-axis? It's a donut, right? A torus. And that torus is an invariant manifold. Trajectories that are on that torus stay on that torus. Okay? But they undergo some kind of a complicated motion in the three-dimensional space as the torus turns round and round the x-axis and the points go round and round on the torus. Okay, it's got 2 degrees of freedom. Okay, now the question is, where did this torus come from, and how do we get rid of it? Because by the time we get around, that's got to go away. Okay, so where did it come from? Push the button. It comes from a heteroclinic orbit from this steady state to this steady state. And these are both saddle points. I'm sorry about the colors. That should be white because this is unstable. This is a saddle. Okay. And notice that this is a codimension 1 bifurcation. This line is a codimension 1 bifurcation. If I'm on one side of the line and I follow the trajectory that comes out of this saddle point, it spirals onto the stable limit cycle. But as I change the parameters, at some point, when I follow the trajectory that comes out of the saddle point, it comes around and comes into the other saddle point. That's a heteroclinic orbit. That's a codimension 1 bifurcation. And if I go a little bit further and I follow the trajectory that comes out of the saddle point, it misses that saddle point and sails off to the east. Okay? And if you look at this heteroclinic orbit and this heteroclinic orbit, and you put them all together, that's an invariant circle, right? And when you go past the bifurcation point, that invariant circle throws off this torus. Just like a SNCC bifurcation in another context. This is a higher dimensional analog of that effect. So this torus is created from the heteroclinic connection. Okay? Now, we have to get rid of the torus. And that happens at this bifurcation point. What's happening is the torus is getting smaller and smaller and smaller and shrinking down onto the stable limit cycle. But this is an unstable torus. The trajectories are winding away from the torus onto the limit cycle and away from the torus like this. Okay, it's an unstable torus. And as that torus shrinks down onto the limit cycle, it changes the stability of the limit cycle. So when we get past the torus bifurcation, that limit cycle is now an unstable limit cycle. Okay? Now, next, we undergo a hop bifurcation because that unstable limit cycle now shrinks down onto this steady state on the right, and it changes the stability of this saddle point, right? That used to be repelling in the x direction and attracting in the other two directions, and now it's repelling in all directions because of the hop bifurcation. And then when I cross the saddle node, I get back to this picture. Okay? So everything fits together, right? You go around a circuit every bifurcation makes sense. Everyone is valid, and we get back to where we started again. Let's see if I have the... Oh, I wanted to show you what these things look like, because these are very strange kinds of solutions. It's relatively easy to draw it in this X-row plane, but when you try to imagine what it looks like in three dimensions, this thing is really complicated. So here's the heteroclinic connection, right? From this saddle point to this saddle point, and then there's a connection there. And inside, there's a stable limit cycle. So now let's rotate everything around the X1 axis and see what it looks like. So inside, there's a stable limit cycle. And the heteroclinic orbit, when I rotate it around the X-axis, creates a globe. Okay? And there's a steady state at the north pole, and there's a steady state at the south pole. And both of those steady states are unstable. Okay? If I start at the steady state at the south pole, I'll move away on the surface of the globe. And I will spiral around. So I'm coming up from the south pole. I do a circuit around the equator. I come into the north pole. And I circle up to the Arctic Circle. And I come into the north pole. But then I take the tunnel through the center of the Earth and get back to the south pole and do it again. Okay? So there are these complicated orbits that go around the globe on the outside and then tunnel through the center. And those orbits are all unstable. That's an invariant manifold with complicated orbits on it, but all those orbits are unstable because a perturbation to the inside of the globe will eventually somehow spiral down onto the stable limit cycle. And perturbations on the outside of the globe will go off someplace else. Okay? So that's the heteroclinic bifurcation. I wrote homoclinic. That's a heteroclinic bifurcation. Okay, next. The torus bifurcation. What does that look like, right? So this is a stable torus, but in our example we had an unstable torus. You just have to change the direction of the arrows. This dot is a limit cycle. And this circle is a torus when I rotate it around. So here's the torus. Okay? And the trajectories are staying on the torus and going round and round. But there's no guarantee they're going to close on themselves when they get round. Those are sometimes called quasi-periodic solutions. Okay? In this case, it's a stable torus with an unstable limit cycle on the inside. In our case, it was an unstable torus with a stable limit cycle on the inside. Okay? And the torus, a torus bifurcation is when a limit cycle changes its stability and casts off the torus. And when the torus is first born, it's a real skinny little tube. But then the torus inflates as you go away from the torus bifurcation. And the torus can be killed at that heteroclinic. Either direction. Okay? So let's go back to the to the two-parameter bifurcation diagram, and I think I show you what a one-parameter bifurcation looks like. Push the button. Okay, push the button again. Okay? So now we're going to do a one-parameter pass around the codimension 2 bifurcation and see what the one-parameter bifurcation diagram will look like. And this you should tuck away in the back of your mind, because any day now I'm expecting to see this. There's no reason why we shouldn't see something like this. We start off at a small value of the bifurcation parameter. There's no steady states at all in this region of parameter space. Then we undergo a saddle node bifurcation. Perfectly reasonable. Okay, we see a stable steady state. And then that steady state loses stability at a hop bifurcation, okay? And the stable limit cycles bifurcate away. But then, as we follow those stable limit cycles, they lose stability unexpectedly. And they lose stability at a torus bifurcation. And they bifurcate away an unstable torus. Right? So the torus, there's an unstable torus that lives in this little domain. And that torus was born at the heteroclinic. Of course, you didn't see that because you were stuck on the stable limit cycle. But, you know, unbeknownst to you, the heteroclinic gave birth to an unstable torus, and the torus is now shrinking down and annihilating your limit cycle, just out of the blue, completely unexpected, right? You didn't see that one coming. And you lose your stable limit cycle. And now you have only repellers. You don't have any attractors, and the system just runs off someplace else in state space. And then you need to have the rest of the bifurcations to tidy everything up. Okay? You with me? And this is as cool as can be, I think. It's really interesting and fascinating. And how they ever figured all this out, I don't know. And case four is even more complicated. I'm not going to try to go through case four. This is a figure taken from Kuznetsov's book. And case four, you can try to figure out for yourself if you want to. And I didn't even have time to figure out what the one-parameter bifurcation diagram would look like. And there's still some fuzzy business about case four, because there's kind of, you know, if you read Kuznetsov's book, he's got this one-parameter bifurcation locus here that he labels J, and it's a wiggly line. That's because it's not a standard codimension one bifurcation that anybody knows about. But there has to be something happening there. At least when he wrote the book, it wasn't well, it hadn't been sorted out exactly what's happening in this at this locus J. So there's still things to be discovered in this field, as old and well studied as it is. There's still lots of surprises. Okay, I think that's the last slide. Yeah. So, any questions?
So what decides whether we get case 1, 2, 3, or
4? Other parameters in the system, right? Remember, Hopf bifurcations come in different flavors, and saddle nodes come in different flavors. I just drew you, in each case, I drew you one example of what the codimension 2 bifurcation looks like. But usually you can reverse all the arrows and get another flavor to these things. But the fold-hop bifurcation is the most complicated one, because actually, in the other cases, what I call the other flavors are just simply changing stability of things. But for the fold-hop, there are four completely different scenarios that can happen, and they must be determined by the other parameters in the system.
Would it just be other parameters in the system, or basically, could the same wiring lead to these different cases?
That's a good question. Could the same wiring diagram or set of differential equations lead to all four of these cases? I don't know. And I don't know, as I say, I don't know a good example of this particular bifurcation. It would be easy to cook up the differential equations for these would you would call the normal form. And it would be easy to write differential equations in a cylindrical coordinate system that would show these bifurcations. But what they would look like in terms of chemistry or biochemistry, I don't really know. And I don't have a nice chemical example to illustrate the fold-hop bifurcation. Yeah, Lee Wu. So back up to case... That's like this case, right? The computer software that we have can trace saddle node bifurcations and Hopf bifurcations. Okay, so you would be able to spot this when you do the two parameter bifurcation diagram. Okay, and then if you remember that these things exist and where to look them up, you can start to probe the different regions, and then it'll give you an idea of which case you have. And when you recognize the case that you have, then you know what other bifurcations to look for. Okay, so a torus bifurcation I think auto can find torus bifurcations, because a torus bifurcation happens when a flow K multiplier crosses the unit circle in some characteristic way. I forget, right? So it's just, again, it's like following these, like following eigenvalues of the Jacobian matrix. You can identify it by an algebraic calculation. So I think that can, that auto can find the torus bifurcation. The heteroclinics are always harder to find, but they come from infinite period oscillations of some sort. But if it's a limit cycle, if it's a limit cycle with a high period, auto can follow it. Whether it's stable or unstable, auto can follow limit cycles with large periods. And that's how you follow saddle loop bifurcations and SNC bifurcations. But I don't know that it can follow the heteroclinic. So my answer is, I think the software can find everything except the heteroclinic. But by the theory, you know the heteroclinic is there, so you can find it one way or another. Yeah. So, like I said, of all these codimension 2 bifurcations, all that I've talked about except for today, we see all the time in our models. They appear over and over again, and they organize the solutions of the differential equations. But for some reason, I've never run across the Fold-Hopf bifurcation. But there's no reason why it shouldn't be there. So you never know when you're going to find it. It's like looking for that red cockaded woodpecker or something like that. It's behind the next tree. Okay. That's it. That's everything I know about bifurcation theory. Thanks.